The Disney Brit podcast is sponsored by Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. At Attraction Tickets Direct, they recognise that people nowadays want to be free from package holiday restrictions and to avoid paying prices inflated by travel agent commission. Because they don't sell through travel agents, they are able to offer attraction tickets at unbeatable prices and offer expert advice. Furthermore, the service they provide is second to none since their lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive their tickets within 7 days and there are no hidden extras such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. You can call them on 0800 975 0002 or visit www.attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk. Complete Orlando are here to help simplify your Orlando holiday. They specialise solely in arranging holidays to Orlando and can therefore provide you with an expert advice and knowledge on this magical destination. They have expert staff available 7 days a week and can personalise your whole itinerary using their range of hotels, private villas and apartments to suit all budgets, as well as car rental, scheduled flights, theme park tickets and travel insurance. Their whole range can be totally tailor-made to offer complete flexibility and fit your individual requirements. Call them on 0800 294 8844 or visit www.completeorlando.co.uk.
Ah, salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Welcome to episode 25 of the Disney Brit podcast for Wednesday, the 30th of September 2009. Yes, we are indeed a quarter of a century old. We've made it to 25 episodes. So, what is coming up on the 25th episode of this podcast? Well, we have our usual news and rumours. Jess and Craig are going to join me for that. We're then going to bring you the fourth day of my Disney diary, find out what I was doing out in Orlando. We're going to bring you the trivia quiz answers to the 15th edition of the Disney Brit trivia quiz. And then we take you on a detailed look at what are the things you need to consider if you're taking young children to Walt Disney World. Well, that is the show. That is the 25th episode. So, without any further ado, let's get on with the show.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
So we're going to delve into the Disney news and rumours from the past couple of weeks. And, of course, joining me, as always, is Juz. Hello, Juz.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Disney pop people.
And also Craig. Hello, Craig.
Hello. Welcome to our family time. Welcome to our brother's time. We're happy giving and taking to the friends we are making. There's nothing we won't do.
The song is called... Is it called Welcome from Brother Bear?
No.
That's what I thought at first, in which case you, by saying that, has freed me up to say it's the Parade of Dreams.
It is indeed, Juz.
Oh, damn.
Because I was thinking of the two then when he said brotherly time, yes, or whatever.
Yes. And see, thing is, you asked for a parade, Adam. And
did I?
You've let yourself down.
Yeah. Well, I thought so that's what it was.
I'll update my scores to 5, but hello and good evening, everyone.
Right, yeah. We're not playing that game anymore. Decided I don't like it. Ban it. From now on. I hate that game. Okay, let's enter to some of the Disney news then. We're going to start off with a bit of news that doesn't link to any parks, but I think it's well worth us mentioning, just purely for the fact that it was such a big bit of news that came out. And that was of Dick Cook, the president of Walt Disney Pictures, resigning. Now, he did this after D23. He'd given his D23 presentation. He'd announced all of these new slate of films that were coming out, and then a couple of weeks later, due to personal reasons, we understand, has decided to stand down from the president's position. It seems that some of these films that were slated could now be in jeopardy. I know that Johnny Depp has been interviewed saying that he's now not sure about Pirates 4. He sort of lost his enthusiasm for it. So Dick Cook sort of standing down, is this going to have a massive negative impact upon Disney, do you think?
I think losing someone of his credibility and stature does have that knock-on effect. But I think there's a lot of great people and succession planning in Disney, so I'm sure it will pick up and up and keep going. I think he's put a lot of great wheels in motion. It's just keeping them all going now, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. He's got, I mean, he's got the drive. He had, you know, he was certainly the kind of figurehead that moved it forward. But, you know, Disney's greater than one guy, and there's a job opening now for you, Juz. So I think that actually every cloud has a silver lining.
Okay, so let's launch into the parks news then. And Disney seems to have joined the online world finally by launching their own blog. It was launched this week. It was actually launched on the 28th of September. And Disney are now going to be using this blog to let people know about latest information and behind-the-scenes secrets. You can find it at disneyparks.disney.go.com/blog. Have either of you two had a chance to check this out yet?
I've had a little look, and it's, I think it's great that Disney's jumped onto the blogosphere just as blogging's dying and tweeting and everything else is taking over.
Yeah, I had a look. I mean, it kind of, you know, poor old Scopa and Disney Mike have not got a job to do anymore. there's a couple of things on there. I mean, it, you know, it looks quite interesting, but to me, I think it's going to be more of a kind of marketing tool for them to push princesses, probably. I'm not sure what sort of information they're going to give out there that, you know, the fans out there haven't got hold of. But, you know, good luck for them for trying something new.
I must admit, looking at the people who are blogging on there, it is people like print and media representatives, it's sort of the marketing guys, so it probably is going to be another marketing tool for them. But at least we've got something official now where we will hopefully find more about Fantasyland and about Star Tours and all of those expansions.
Yeah, I mean, they had quite a good video on there for the California Adventure and, you know, Space Mountain Halloween style. So, I mean, you know, there were some interesting bits on there, but it was probably early days.
Yeah, very early days, isn't it? And there's a lot of stuff on there that seemed to cover some of the stuff that was talked about at D23. So hopefully there'll be more information that will come out over time that will give us something new to look at and to think about. Okay, let's move into the world of Disney sport. And the Atlanta Braves have announced that they are definitely returning for their spring training to Orlando again. There has been no dates confirmed, but it's likely that it's going to be the similar sort of dates to what it was last year. I know last year they upped their training games to 18 and really sort of packed out the stadium over at the Wide World of Sports. Is this something that you guys have seen? Craig, do you go? Have you been over to see the Atlanta Braves when you've been over there?
Well, yeah, I've done it once. Just trying to work out, it was 1991, so it was quite a long time ago. But I mean, baseball is my favourite sport, American sport anyway, apart from proper football over here. And I had a really good day. It was in the afternoon. I just phoned up Ticketmaster actually and got tickets. They weren't that expensive. I just remember sitting out in the sunshine and really enjoying it. So it kind of hasn't got the feeling of nighttime matches that I go and see when I go over to the States for work, which is to Chicago. So I've got two of the kind of the best clubs there to go and see. But it really is a good afternoon. I mean, the World Wide of Sports is a nice place anyway. And, you know, to go and see kind of a pre-season friendly match, I think it's good fun. If you haven't seen baseball and you want to try it out, then I think it's a really good afternoon. Just be careful of the sun.
Juz, have you been over and had a chance to see anything?
Not done. I mean, you know, like everyone else, I've wandered around the thing, and I think the place is quite amazing. So anything like this going in is brilliant. I'm more of a Orlando Magic basketball when we go across there than baseball. But no, I think anything that comes there and they keep getting people coming down there, I think is absolutely amazing. Because It's just one of those overlooked places. Like, people go to Disney, go to all the parks, and completely forget about that side of it.
I think you're right. I've never seen a live baseball match. I've always wanted to go and see one, never had the chance. And the Atlanta Braves training season sort of normally comes just before what we have as our Easter break over here in the UK. So I always just miss it. But it's certainly something I'd love to go and see. So, you know, when I get a chance, I will go over and watch some baseball, as well as some basketball with Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
Magic Kingdom, then, let's head into the parks. A bit more information with regards to the Skyway building. We did announce a few weeks ago that the Skyway building was being demolished, and I know, Jez, you asked the question, are the toilets going to survive? Well, it turns out that yes, the toilets are remaining, but the rest of the Skyway building has now been flattened. Work is now moving forward to sort of work on the ground surrounding what used to be the Skyway building location, and they are preparing for its development. There was a rumour that it was going to create a new viewing platform for Space Mountain, but yet we're waiting to hear more and more about that. But, you know, this creates more space, and more of an open area, maybe an opportunity for some sort of gangway or alleyway or corridor or something towards more of the backstage of Magic Kingdom, so they can add another major attraction to Tomorrowland, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's got to be logic behind it. You know, I presume that their laws aren't like ours where, you know, if you have an empty building, you still have to pay rates on it. It's not like that. So there's got to be some logic behind them why they're doing it. So good on them.
Yeah, it'd be good to see something new if they can put something new in there. Maybe a Stitch attraction.
Oh, no. No. I'm just surprised that nobody's found it, leaked any information, because the one thing they do have to do in America is they have to file permits and things, and that's where people normally get kind of, you know, the information about what Disney's up to.
Yeah.
And obviously nothing's come out yet, so I just wondered what they're doing with it. I'm just a little bit intrigued.
Yeah, because most people manage to find something about the permits and post it online fairly quickly, but there's been nothing at all about this Skyway building. Just thought that rumour that there's some sort of viewing platform going in for Space Mountain. OK, let's head on to Main Street then, and then we're going to come back to Tomorrowland in a second. We'll head on to Main Street, where you know that there's that really handy tips board as you walk down Main Street on the right-hand side. Well, it seems that tips board is getting a bit of a makeover. Now, a series of shuttered white panels now stand in its place, with some sort of desk, it seems, in front of it. And there's rumours that maybe this tips board has gone for good, and they're going to be moving it to another location, and this is going to be a new merchandise location. Now, again, Disney have not announced exactly what this is going to be. The actual shuttered white panel areas are quite deep, so it could be that it's something for, like, pins or lanyards or small keyring plushies or something like that. But it'd be shame to see that location disappearing, because that tips board's in a nice wide open space. I don't know, will a tips board combined with a merchandise location be a good thing, or do you think it's going to cause more crowds for merchandise than it is for it being a tips board?
I'm not sure. I imagine it's probably going to end up with the DVC area. So I think, does Magic Kingdom have a DVC area?
Yeah, there's a Dumbo Circus themed area in Fantasyland.
Ah, you see, that'll be going.
Oh, it could be.
Or the redesign. So I think that'll be a perfect location to catch everyone with DVC, which is doing nothing but growing at the moment.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, they've just opened a load of DVC in California, the first ones they've had out there. So it could be, yeah, maybe they're going to include a DVC area next to the tips board. That's, I suppose, quite a captive audience, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, let's
just hop. Juz has rumbled it. That's what they're going to do, aren't they?
Interesting to see if it does, and then Juz has some foresight and DVC. Scary.
It's always Disney's best kept secret, that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's, it really is. What is the secret? I don't know what it is.
Surprise people know about it.
The Skyway building is the best kept secret.
That's the new DVC building. That's your new apartment.
The DVC toilets. Okay. Right, I don't know. We're just getting off topic now, aren't we? So let's move back into Tomorrowland, where there's a new show coming to Tomorrowland. Hooray!
Stitch related.
It is Stitch related indeed, and it's for Christmas. Stitch seems to be returning to the Tomorrowland stage for Christmas. There's going to be a new show called A Totally Tomorrowland Christmas. It seems that Stitch is going to be a major part of it. Maybe they're going to bring back the interactive Stitch element with the screen above as well. Again, very, very little news on what the show's content is going to be, but it seems that Stitch is definitely going to be at the centre of this new show. I can hear that Craig, obviously, is really excited about this. Stitch is by far his most favourite character in the world, and he would love to do nothing more than spend his whole day on Stitch's Great Escape.
Yeah, what's happening at Epcot?
Can I point out here that I'm one of the very few people who really like Stitch's Great Escape.
See, I like it as well.
But my only issue is I really like the character Stitch, and my youngest adores him. My issue here is they keep doing stuff with Stitches which is really, really poor quality. And I think what you're doing now is you're tarnishing his image. So people like Craig, and a bit like me jokingly go, oh, I hope he's not another Stitch name, because they're just not putting anything which is like, wow, attached to his name.
But do you not think that Disney will have thought about this and thought, well, OK, the last show really just did not work. People just were not interested. And they thought to themselves, right, if we're going to put this new show out, it's going to have to be something good. Otherwise, this is really going to finish it off for Stitch. Do you not think that they've sort of taken this show back to the drawing board and said, right, this has got to be really good. Otherwise, it's going to cause major problems?
No, it would be the same show, different songs with snow.
OK. Once again, the inside of Jazz. So snow in Tomorrowland, that's what you reckon? Okay, it'd be interesting to see whether or not it is going to be a really good show or not. Okay, we are going to go to Epcot now, Craig, as you've already asked for Epcot. We're going to go over because indeed now the Food and Wine Festival has begun. Something that is well talked about, something that is close to our hearts with it being food related. I know, Craig, you're thinking about going when you're over there, are you not?
Not thinking, am definitely going.
Oh, yes. Definitely going. Okay. Well, let's give you some of the 2009 menus that are available for the Food and Wine Festival. I am going to attempt to do this service, unlike Craig, if you heard the last Iron Orlando, managed to butcher several menus. I'm going to try and do this properly. So let's go through some of the places that we've got. There's some really nice sounding stuff in and around. So, for example, let's start ourselves off in Buenos Aires in Argentina. There's two that sound lovely. There's the beef empanada with tomato salsa and the grilled beef skewers with chimichurri sauce, which makes me sound like chimney, but chimichurri sauce. They're $4.75, $4.25. They sound really nice. Another one that really sort of stood out to me was the Crema Catalana from Barcelona, Spain. There is also this in Cork, in Ireland, the warm chocolate lava cake with Bailey's ganache. I thought it sounded like quite a nice one. I've got a bit of a sort of sweet tooth. Bangkok have got the chicken and coconut soup, which really stood out for me as well. I thought that sounded really good. Apple strudel with vanilla sauce in Munich in Germany. Cannelloni in Italy. New England lobster roll in the hops and barley market. There's things like spicy tuna roll and California sushi roll, which would be really good in Tokyo in Japan. Cajun style crawfish in New Orleans. Pretzel breadsticks, which I love, in the Brewer's Collection. And some lamb slider with tomato chutney in Wellington, New Zealand. There's just hundreds and hundreds of things going on here. Of course, Craig's favourite is the Greek area, which has got the Greek salad. And baklavas on there as well, which I know is just Craig's going to be there lapping it up.
First in the queue, yeah.
You know, what would be your first choice? Which is your first pavilion you're going to go to? You know, which country is going to be your number one spot?
Well, I think we always tend to enter via Mexico, so, you know, those two sound great. So I think I'll have those.
Okay.
And then I'm probably going to, as I said on Iron Orlando, I go for the food and Debs will go for the wine. So we'll probably then go, I quite fancy, you didn't mention the nice Indian pancake crepe.
Oh, no, I didn't. I missed that one off.
So that sounds quite nice, although that really turns Jazz off. Then probably I'd take a little walk around. What would I fancy? The Cook Island one sounds quite good.
Yeah.
Skip England because that's probably just going to be something dreadful, and then go around to Italy and have the cannelloni, and Debs will have some more wine.
Jules, what's your number one then?
My number one will be the New Orleans, Louisiana. I love, absolutely adore gumbo, so it's going to have to be that in. Straight away. Yeah. So I'd have to go for that first. And yourself?
I think I'm quite tempted by the Mexican. The Mexican sounds really good to me. I do like Mexican food. So I think that would be my first stop. Probably followed by Spain, maybe. So, you know, a little sort of Mediterranean-y style food, I think, would be my way of going around. But to be honest, I'd probably stop at all of them and try as many as I can. Start in the morning and finish in the evening. That sounds good to me.
Defo.
So if you are going to Food and Wine, please do give us a ring. Let us know what you think. Give us a ring while you're at Food and Wine, even better. And let us know, give us a review of some of the things that you've tried and tasted, because we'd really love to hear what you thought about it, especially for those of us who can't go. Yes, thank you, Craig. Right, so let's go over to Animal Kingdom then.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, you didn't need to do anything. It was the silence that said it all. Let's move into Animal Kingdom, where we have one piece of news, and it seems that there's more characters coming. And Miss Bunny and Thumper from Bambi are going to be added to the meet-and-greet characters over at Camp Minnie Mickey. If you go over there from the 4th of October onwards, you'll be able to meet both of those there. Are these... I don't know... When I first read this, I thought, this is a strange choice of character to be going into Animal Kingdom.
Why? They're animals.
Well, they are animals. But bearing in mind the sort of animals that Animal Kingdom evokes, bunnies weren't my first thought.
Yeah, I shouldn't buy a dinosaur, let him eat him off.
In the middle of a dinosaur.
I love Thumper. Everyone loves Thumper.
Yeah.
I just think it's quite a shame that Miss Bunny's still just a miss and not found anybody yet.
Oh, bless her. This is all on her own.
I know Thumper's sweet. My very first rabbit, well, my only rabbit, was called Thumper. So it'd be quite nice to go and see Thumper. You say it's an odd choice of animal, though, isn't it? Bunnies,
yeah.
But why not? Nice and cuddly and friendly.
Is he going to be, banging his foot the whole time you're there trying to get an autograph? That'd be really hard to write an autograph while doing that.
Maybe they're just going to put a bit of ink on his toes and stamp your pad.
Yeah, it'll be a bunny stamp, foot stamp.
But you'd have to get it out quick before he did it again, or she'd get a double bunny stamp.
Anyway, next news.
Okay, let's jump on a plane, fly over to Disneyland Paris, because like I said, there's not much news going around at the moment. And we're going to start off with a bit of merchandise news for Disneyland Resort Paris, because of course, with it being nearly October 2009, what's the first piece of merchandise you'd expect to see in the parks?
Easter eggs.
No. 2010 merchandise has arrived. It seems that at the moment it is only T-shirts, but, as we're coming to the end of our very first towards the end of our very first decade of the new millennium, Disney have gone all out with the 2010 T-shirts. Most of them have got Mickey or different characters on with 2010 blazing across the front of them. So it looks like Disney are really trying to sort of cash in on the market before it even arrives. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of getting merchandise with like T-shirts with the date on them. Things like Christmas decorations, that sort of stuff, I always try and get something so we know when we've been. But I can't say 2010 T-shirts are going to be on my shopping list in December.
No, as you say, we tend to get a pin, which has the year on it, and you put it in our pin book. But then again, a lot of people do it, and it, perhaps they're cashing in on the fact that Christmas presents, people going across, buying them for other people.
Very good point. Craig, you're going out in January now, haven't you? You booked that?
I am, yes.
So you're going to be getting your 2010 T-shirt?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Fine. No, I'll get a pin. Kids will probably want a T-shirt, but they're not listening to this because they don't know, because Father Christmas has got them this.
Right, okay.
But, yeah, so you've just blown that, Adam. Thanks. so they can't listen to this one. We'll buy something.
Fast forward this.
Dates on. Yeah, but not T-shirts.
I say it's not a big thing for me with dates on. Let's move into the resorts briefly and find out what has been going on over there. The Sequoia Lodge, if you are going to stay in the Sequoia Lodge any time in the next few weeks, do be aware that the quarry pool is currently closed for some major work, including improvements on the insulation and acoustic dampening. They're going to dampen the acoustic within the actual pool area itself. Now, while this work is being done, hotel guests are given the chance to use another pool at a different resort hotel. And it's quite interesting that on the door where the swimming pool is, it says, unfortunately, we're closed due to important emergency maintenance work. Please go to guest service or concierge, and they will tell you where you can go, which resorts you'll be able to go swimming. But according to these signs, it doesn't say that it has to be a particular resort. So does this mean, you can get yourself in the Disneyland hotel pool just to make yourself look a bit posh?
No, it's probably the Explorers, and you can't take the sort of 20-minute walk to get
there. The Explorers pool.
I know, but it's a 25-minute walk from where you are.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it's good to see that they're offering that as an alternative.
I can't see it being that one, though. I imagine they'll probably go for one of the others, like Newport or whatever, something like that.
Newport or New York, I suppose, are quite an extra region, aren't they?
Yeah.
You never told me that before I booked the Sequoia Lodge, though, did you, Adam?
Oh, no, but it's all right, because it'll be open by the time you get back then. It'll be nice and new, and it'll look lovely. But I must admit, when we stayed at Sequoia Lodge and we went and used their pool, there was a real sort of echo in there. Has anybody else stayed there? No, it's just me, yeah, obviously.
I walked past there and thought, listen, it's dampening quite quickly.
I've stayed there once before, but we never went to the pool, so I wouldn't
know. It's so noisy.
Somebody was too noisy.
Don't go in there.
There was
the
egg boxes up on the ceiling and painting them.
No, I remember it being quite noisy in there, quite the acoustic obviously being quite echoey in it because it was so loud. I'm glad they are doing something with it, which is good. Just going to be silly.
Marco!
Polo! Marco!
Polo!
Marco!
Polo! It's such a really bizarre thing to be doing. Sit there, the goggles just down. It's too noisy, lads.
From now on,
this isn't right.
From now on, you'll say something, and you won't hear the end of the word because it'll have dampened out before you've actually got it out.
I'm drowning.
You don't go in on here because problem voice, something like that. Right. Okay. Let's go a bit further. Let's leave the hotels behind. We're going to go over to Disney Village, where the Buffalo Bills Wild West show, which we had the opportunity to visit when we went early on in the year, has reduced its prices because of the reduction in VAT. Disney have now changed their prices to €70 for the first category for adults and €58 for the second category. Children's prices are €56 for category one, while the second category is €44. Now, this, compared to the previous price, has saved €1 per guest. So, you know, you're saving a euro. Which again is, we had this conversation, didn't we, about this whole VAT thing that Disney changing the prices slightly. I don't know. I wouldn't look at it and go, "Oh, we're saving a euro. Brilliant. Let's go." It's still not much of a change, is it? Is it still worth the €70, though, I think, isn't it?
It's making it sound like saving the whale, isn't it? Saving the euro. Do you know what? I loved it. I thought it was great. You've got to go with someone like Adam who doesn't eat all his food. That way, I certainly got my food to work.
That's very true.
But as we said at the time, second category was great seats anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were. They were really good.
It's one of the things that if you can do and you can afford it, and I know, you know, if you look at the dollar rate and all that lot, you get a better value if you go over there, and it seems dearer over here by natural side of things. But no, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Craig, have you ever been to Buffalo Bills?
No, I haven't actually, and I'm open to be persuaded to go. I mean, it's quite a lot of money, but I haven't been there for 5 years, so, and I probably won't go back again for another five. So if it's something that, you know, we really must do, then I'm open to be persuaded.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something you must do, especially you're going in January time when it's quieter, the parks are going to be closing earlier, and because there's less to do in the evening, it's definitely well worth a visit because it's something else for that evening to do. But the food's really good, the show's excellent, you know, fully interactive. It's well worth going to visit if you've never done it before, definitely. Would you agree, Jez?
Yeah, you don't have to take the kids or the missus. Just go yourself.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's true.
It's cheaper then. Save more than €1.
Do you know what you call it?
Make it.
Research trip.
Yeah, €1.
Research trip, yeah.
Well, we get free dining this time when we go anyway, so they can go and have something to eat somewhere else.
Can you use your free dining vouchers towards the cost?
Yes. It halves the price, I think.
Oh, does it really?
I think it halves your price. It doesn't get the full amount.
Check that one out.
Sure.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right, we talked about Premium Fastpass and said how much we didn't like it because we're ever so negative. No, we're not. We talked about Premium Fastpass.
We're saving the euro.
We are saving a euro. So in that case, we can put that towards the price of a Premium Fastpass because they are still available. Disney have extended this offer. It was supposed to be on trial until the 16th of August, but it seems that this trial is either not ended or Disney have now made it a permanent feature. There has been no announcement as to which way this has gone, but it is still available from the Disneyland Hotel and also still from the Newport Bay. I really hope this just doesn't happen. I'm really, really got my fingers crossed that this is just something that they're still testing. You know, admittedly, there's only 100 available per day, and that actually isn't going to make a massive difference to myself. But still, I just don't want to see Premium Fastpass. It's just wrong.
Yeah, I think at the moment there's got to be a better way of doing it than that. But, you know, I suppose they're examining and looking at each different aspect and how to bring the extra bits in. So we don't agree with it, but if we're filthy rich, I'm sure we would.
Yeah. No, Fastpass works well. And actually, on the point of Fastpass, I've got some really good news. I was speaking to a friend of mine who went to Disneyland Paris over the summer, and they said that on the one day they went to the Disney Studios park, it was really busy, and they changed, for that day, Fastpass from Flying Carpets of Aladdin to Crush's Coaster.
No way.
Yeah. So again, whether it was just the test, but he said that the fast passes were available for Crush's Coaster and he was able to use it. So something that happened, again, maybe just testing that out.
Needs to be done.
Needs to be done. It does need to be done, definitely. And hopefully we'll find out again in December as to whether this is a permanent thing and whether they're bringing that back. Okay, final bit of news. Well, we can't really call it news because it doesn't really exist, but we're going to talk about it anyway. And that is Toy Story Playland over in Walt Disney Studios. I was listening to the interview recently with the Disney Imagineers as part of the Pixar in the Parks press conference from D23. And it was mentioned by somebody, could you tell us about the what's happening over at Disneyland Paris? And the response was, there is currently no planned projects for Disneyland Paris. Which, of course, explains why the blue fencing at Disneyland Paris now has a massive sign on it that says, the toys are coming. And on it, it's got Green Army Men, Buzz, Slinky. It's got Rex and RC. It's got the big ball with the red star on it and a flying aeroplane on the side of this blue fencing. Because, of course, they're not coming because we've been told there's no planned projects. But actually, they are coming. So maybe this is a volunteer charity mural project that, again, the cast members have been doing in the evening. And this isn't really coming.
No, I think it goes back to exactly what we said, is they're not telling anybody else in Disney what they're up to, and they're building it on the quiet, and, you know, not telling anyone. It's going to open, and they go, oh, we told you about that. Oh, no.
What on earth was that? Okay, right, so that's our French listeners we've just got rid of. They just unsubscribed. Are we trying to upset everyone this week or what? But inside, behind the actual buried walls, there's loads of stuff going on. You know, there's the work's progressing gradually as the days go by. I just still don't get what is going on. You know, they're not announcing it. We've now got this sign up. We know it's coming in 2010. It's all part of this new generation festival. It's appeared on posters. Just tell us, for goodness sake. Okay, I know I go on about this every week, but still, you know, get on with it. Get it sorted. Right, that's our news. That is it. Woo-hoo. We are done. Told you it wasn't only going to be short. There wasn't an awful lot to go through. So there's the news from the past couple of weeks at both Walt Disney World and Disneyland Resort Paris. Have you ever dreamed the dream of the children? Join me once again for my fourth and fifth day audio diary. I thought I'd roll two in one. So on the fourth day, we didn't do a huge amount here in Orlando. Spent the day really mostly at the hotel. Went down to downtown Disney after breakfast in the morning. Did go in and have a good look around there. Managed to pick up the latest copy of the D23 magazine. Some really great articles in there. Cost about $17, so not too bad. But there's some great stuff in there about the Haunted Mansion and some stuff in there as a tribute to Wayne Allwine, as well as some other bits and pieces. So that was really day four. We went out for dinners to Shoney's in the evening, but didn't really do a lot else. Today, day five, was a really great day. It was a day to go and do the Backstage Magic Tour. It was up about, left the house about 8 a.m., headed over to Epcot. We met Monica. Monica was our tour guide for the day. The tour began at 9, finished around 4 p.m., and she took us around on what was one of the Disney Cruise Line coaches. There was five of us on the tour, and the five of us all sat on this cruise line coach. And the tour was excellent. Our tour guide, Monica, is highly recommended. We went to Epcot, and we had a look around the American Adventure Pavilion, looked sort of underneath the stage to have a look at how the track system works for the animatronics. We went over to Hollywood Studios, had the opportunity to look backstage there, went backstage at the Tower of Terror. We also went to Laundry Services. If you've never heard anything about it, Laundry Services is one of the most amazing sites you'll ever see. The fact that they're laundering so many pieces of towels and bedding and costume is just immense, and just seeing how that works. We also went over to the Central Shops. Now, Central Shops is where the Disney crew, mechanics, engineers work on new attractions or bits of attractions that maybe aren't working properly or anything that's in refurb. With Space Mountain being a refurb at the moment, we saw a lot of the Space Mountain vehicles in there. Still seem to be three seats per carriage, all sat behind each other, have some soft leather seating. And it's the same lap bar as always, but it doesn't seem that there's any change at all to the track system from what we understand. But we also went and saw the audio animatronics department at Central Shops, which is interesting to see. Saw some other things that they were building, some wooden objects they were building, and also what looks like a change to the parking tram system over here at Walt Disney World. After Central Shops, we also had the opportunity to go for lunch at the Whispering Canyon Cafe. And if you've never been to Whispering Canyon, it's a great place. Just to walk into the lobby of Wilderness Lodge is an experience in itself. But actually to walk in there and also to experience the meal they gave you, which was basically a skillet, and on that skillet there were ribs, chicken, there was also sausage, there was mashed potato, there was beans, and this skillet was full, and I mean full of all this food, and they just kept bringing it out. If the skillet was empty, they brought more and more out. We had like a fruit cobbler for dessert, and they just brought us unlimited soft drinks. I think I had a root beer, and they sort of filled one up before we'd finished the previous one, which was excellent. But overall, a really, really great tour. Finished off the day at the Magic Kingdom. We went and saw the parade. We looked at some of the windows, and we went down to the Utilidors as well. And that was excellent. End of the day, back at Epcot, where we were dropped off, able to go into Epcot and enjoy the park. And we were given these Backstage Magic badges, as well as having a Backstage Magic sort of lanyard that we were given with our names on as well. But well worth doing the Backstage Magic tour. I think it's about $219. But if it's something that you really want to try, I highly, highly recommend going and doing that. Came home, went for a swim, and then we went out this evening to the boardwalk and went and had a look around there and caught the Friendship Boat over to the Yacht Beach Club and went to Beaches and Cream for dinner. Had an excellent burger. I honestly think they're probably some of the best burgers on property. And finished off, of course, there's nothing else you can finish off your meal with over at Beaches and Cream than a kitchen sink. So we enjoyed the kitchen sink as well. Bit of rain. I'm currently watching a thunderstorm in front of me. So I think I'm going to sign off before it gets any worse. So that was day five. Day six, we are off to Universal Studios. Although it's not Disney, I'll bring you a report on how Universal was. So until then, goodbye. Welcome to the 15th edition of the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. On the last edition of the podcast, we brought you the questions, and on this edition of the podcast, we're going to bring you the answers. So, let's hope you got your answers in front of you, and here are the answers for the 15th Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. Okay, let's start off with question one then, 100 points. The question was this. What do you call a Walt Disney employee that is involved in the creative process of a new ride, show or attraction? Of course, the answer was an Imagineer. Now, an Imagineer is officially known as a Walt Disney Imagineer and is an employee of the Walt Disney Company. Now, although they work under the same title, they carry different skills, including artists, writers, engineers, construction managers and designers. Question two was 200 points, and it was this. What is the name of the benefit that Disney hotel guests can use that allow them extra time in the parks? And it is Extra Magic Hour. Now, this benefit allows guests the opportunity to enter a park an hour early or stay in for up to 3 hours after the park's official closing time. Now, all three parks and water parks open early or late, and depending on the day, depends on which park is open. Guests must show their Key to the World card during Extra Magic Hours. Question three, which is 300 points, is this. Which area of a Walt Disney World theme park is only accessible by train? So which area of a Walt Disney World theme park is only accessible by train? It is Conservation Station, Rafiki's Planet Watch. Now, you can only get to Africa's Miniland via the Wildlife Express train. Once you've arrived, you can explore many areas to find out more about conservation techniques and veterinary advancements. Guests can also follow discovery trails and meet some friendly animals in the petting yard. Question four, then, for 400 points. What was the original name of Mickey Mouse? And the answer was Mortimer. Now, according to legend, this is the name that Walt Disney came up with for his new character after losing the rights to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. When he told his wife Lillian she didn't think the name had a great appeal, the name was changed to Mickey. The character Mortimer Mouse did appear in a 1936 animated short, Mickey's Rival, as a rival for Minnie's affection. The character Mortimer also appeared in the 1930s comic strip Death Valley, where he played the part of Minnie's ranch-owning uncle. Question five, then, 500 points. Where can you shoot a .54 caliber Hawkins Buffalo rifle? And it is at the Frontierland Shooting Gallery. Now, the arcade was an opening day attraction and is set on Boot Hill in around 1850. The shooting gallery originally gave guests over 100 targets to shoot at with real pellets. They stayed until the summer of 1982 when the guns underwent some modifications to incorporate new laser technology. Why? Well, every time a guest hit a target, it would chip off a little bit of paint, and the maintenance crew would have to touch them up each evening. They would get through around 2,000 gallons of paint a year. Question six, then, for 600 points was this. In which theatre would you watch the Candlelight Processional? And the answer is the American Gardens Theatre. Now, the Candlelight Processional began in 1958 in Disneyland, and when the Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World opened, it took on the same event. It remained here until 1994, when it moved to the Open Air Theatre in the American Adventure Pavilion. Question seven, then, for 700 points was this. What is the name of the man-made body of water found in Epcot? The answer is the World Showcase Lagoon. With a perimeter of 1.2 miles, the lagoon outlines one side of the World Showcase and leads round to Future World. With such a large shoreline, it allows guests plenty of viewing locations for the nightly fireworks spectacular Illuminations Reflection of Earth. During the day, friendship boats take guests to one of the four docking points on the lagoon, Morocco, Germany, and two at the World Showcase Plaza. A bridge between the French and UK pavilion allows water to flow through a canal that takes boats from the International Gateway to Disney's Hollywood Studios via the Boardwalk and Beach and Yacht Club. Question eight, then, for 800 points. This was the hardest one of the quiz, and I thought it might be get a few people, but it seems that a lot of people got this one correct. So well done to all of you, including our own Craig Duncan. I'll go through who has sent us the emails in a second, but question eight was this. What was to be the original name for It's a Small World? And the answer was Children of the World. Now, when Walt Disney was approached by UNICEF to create a ride for the 1964-65 New York's World's Fair, he came up with the title of Children of the World. The premise of the ride was no different to the version that exists today, but the music was very different. Walt had planned to use national anthems of the world to represent each country. During testing, it became apparent that the cacophony of noise wouldn't work. So Walt approached the Sherman Brothers and said, well, we need one song. So they went away and they came back with the infamous It's a Small World. The title of the song then became the title of the attraction. Well, there are the 8 answers to the questions that we gave you on the last episode of the podcast. Well done to all of those people that entered. You did extremely well. I'm really impressed. And especially to the following people who sent in emails. First was Keith Fischetti from Long Island, New York, wrote, "Hi, Adam. Hope I'm not too late. If so, no big deal. Here are my answers to the quiz. Sorry, but I don't remember the number. I am a new listener to the show, and I must say that I'm really enjoying it a lot. Great stuff. Keep up looking forward to the new show as always and as they come out." And that's from Keith. He is DisneyNut68 on the forums, Facebook, and virtually everywhere on the online Disney universe. Also, Kim Nicola, now I'm sorry if I really just butchered your surname, from Valparaiso in Indiana. She wrote, "I've been listening for a while now and decided to take a chance on the recent trivia quiz. I want you to know that I really enjoy the show and think the chemistry that you guys have is really great and a lot of fun to listen to. When I first got my iPod, I listened to every Disney podcast that I could and whittled it down to just a few, with Lou being my favourite, of course. And when I heard you on his show, I decided to check out yours, and I have been a loyal listener ever since. Keep up the work." That's from Kim. Thank you, Kim, for your email. Finally, Brian and Tom Jackson. "Hi, guys. Here are the questions for the quiz for episode 24. Great podcast." That's Brian and Tom. All of those people there, so Keith Fischetti, Kim Nicola, and Brian and Tom Jackson, congratulations, you got all 8 of those right. And that rounds off the quiz for this time, until the next episode of the podcast, when we bring you a net set of 8 questions. To Walt Disney World many times, and always without children, until this summer when I finally went and took my 2.5-year-old little boy Harry for his first ever trip to Walt Disney World. And wow, was it different. Because actually, taking a young person to Walt Disney World really is a very, very different experience. And maybe you're the sort of person who is about to take a young one to Walt Disney World for the very first time. And we thought, well, we've all got kids, and they all were young when we first took them to Walt Disney World, so why not pass on some of the tips from ourselves and from some of our listeners. So, once again, Juz and Craig join me, and we are going to look at different elements of taking Walt Disney children to Walt Disney World. We've actually split it up into several sections, which we'll explain. We've got the flight, we've got like equipment for babies and toddlers, we've got to boogie or not to boogie, whether to take your own boogie or not, how to deal with the time difference, transport, accommodation, dealing with the heat, planning your holiday, rides, attractions, characters, and what is the right age to actually take your child for their first trip. So we're going to go through section by section and give you our tips and the tips of other people. So let's start off with our flights then. And we've had some emails in from people with some different comments. So I've got 2 tips here from Rebecca Palmer Bunting, who says this. Can you manage them on your knee for a 9-hour flight? If not, think about a sky cot or buy them a seat. And there's lots of little things to do on a flight. My kids love sticker books, and it can keep them occupied for a long, long time. So, guys, you know, what are your sort of tips for flying to Walt Disney World with young children?
Well, now the baggage allowance has kicked in, you can't put them in your suitcases anymore. It's just going to cost you £35. And but if they're small, they can still fit in the overhead luggage area quite neatly, I find. But you know, at the end of the day, it's a long time for them, and I completely agree. I've used things like sticker books, DSs, anything at all that you plan the trip out and say, look, we're going to be doing this, this and this. And no matter what you do, they're going to get grouchy at some point.
Oh, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, I get grouchy on a 9-hour flight, so I don't expect Harry not to. Talking about those little ideas you just said about little things they can do, what we did was we went shopping to Asda or somewhere like that over sort of the 5 or 6 month build-up. We'd see little toys that were like £1 or 50p or something like that, or a sticker book, and we'd sneak them in the trolley, and then we'd hide them, and just before the holiday we actually wrapped all of them up and put them inside his hand luggage, and then as the flight went on we'd take something out. You know, this sort of stuff cost us maybe £5, £6, £7. We'd take something out and give it to him, and it was like this brand new toy that he could open up and he could play with. So there was cars and trains and things like that, and that kept him quiet for a good little while. So that was something that sort of kept him going and something that he really enjoyed. Craig, you know, you've been taking your kids to Walt Disney World ever since they were little. You know, how have you dealt with both of them on a flight?
Okay, I think first of all, the thing to mention is that if they are under 2 years old on your return journey, that they don't actually need a seat. So you don't have to buy a seat for them. You still have to have a ticket, but not a seat. So now, the two airlines that I've mainly travelled to Florida and have been either British Airways or Virgin, they both do something called a SkyCot. So when I think the youngest Alex has been 11 months and Kieran was just over a year when we first took him. Now, the SkyCot is just basically like, a box, padded box that goes in the bulkhead seats, and you know, a small child, probably I would say less than 10 months old, can sit comfortably in that. The difference is on British Airways, they actually have something called a Sky Bassinet, which is like a car seat that they give you, and it's for older children, and that can go up to 18 months. So that's the difference in two. So when they were slightly older, I actually booked British Airways on the point, it was the same price, but because they could sit in a car seat, so they could sit upright and they could bounce and bounce. So that's the first thing. The other thing that we do is, as you have with Harry, you've got like their own hand luggage, and we just fill it up with, you know, they have a pencil case, they have a notepad, they have drawing paper. We used to go, there was a website they had, I think it was called Teachers Resources or something, where you could create your own word searches, which they both love, and you could put Disney characters in, anything you liked, and you could make them as complicated or as difficult, as simple as you wanted. So we used to do that. DS is, as Josh says, they've both now got little iPods, so they have those. And, you know, both of those airlines have kid-back TVs, so they would quite happily sit there and watch a movie. And the only thing I did is, when they're really little and not really into those things that they watched on the TV, I always used to take my laptop with me, and I would, you know, just... a couple of days before we go, just kind of record a load of things off CBeebies onto a DVD and just put that in my laptop, and they'd sit there and watch that. But I think the thing is that, you know, I used to just devote my entire flight to looking after them, and I was quite happy to do so, being at work and not having really any time with them. Mm. You know, I had 9 hours of no work and I could sit and play with them, whereas Debs would just sit and read a book or something. So I think you just have to kind of dedicate a little bit more of your time to the kids to keep them occupied.
I think that DVD idea is a really good one. We did exactly the same thing on this last trip, that there was a lot of stuff that Harry was really into. And again, over the weeks before, we recorded different programs that he really liked. So we had some Little Einsteins, we had some Thomas the Tank, we had some Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, and we recorded all of those onto a DVD. And I actually made 3 DVDs in all. And I was able then to use those on the flight, because actually, as good as the kids' TV stations are, they're a little bit unpredictable, because they have a really wide range of programs. They have things like Lazy Town to Hannah Montana, all the way down to Rory the Racing Car and Fifi the Flower Pots, I think we had on ours. And some of those things he was really interested in, and some of them he just didn't care less for. We were able to upgrade our in-flight entertainment, so you can actually touch screen and watch whatever you wanted and pause and rewind and replay, which was really handy. But it was still the fact that there wasn't necessarily the programs that he really wanted. And you were talking about hand luggage and the things that you can take. We bought a trunkie. I don't know if you've heard of these trunkies. They're basically like a ride-on suitcase. They are the size, so you can have them as hand luggage, but they're really hard and sturdy. So not only can you as child sit on it and you can pull them through the airport, but also, because they're sturdy, you can cram loads of stuff in it and know that when you shut it, it's not going to bulge or not be able to fit into where it's supposed to fit into. So that's another one of my tips.
Cool.
What about flight times for you guys? You know, do you find it's better to fly at a different time than others?
I'm not sure. I think we've done both. And to be honest with you, sometimes the nights are nice because they fall asleep anyway. But after being sat there a while, kids and sleep patterns can change quite rapidly, so you tend to find even on a 9-hour flight during the day, the kids will nod off anyway. So
yeah, that's true.
More than it's long, really.
Craig, do you regularly?
Yeah, I do. I'll go with what the cheapest option is, and, you know, Virgin and BA have different flights going at different times. I think I would always try and take the earlier flight in the morning just because there's less time waiting around for them, there's less anticipation, they're obviously extremely excited to get there. So one of their flights leaves, I think, about 11:15 from Gatwick, so that's great, and you could get there, and we'll go on and talk about kind of how we deal with jet lag with them. But coming home, I would always like to take the latest flight possible just because I do want them to sleep sleep on the plane. And actually coming home this time, our flight was, we were on the 9 o'clock flight and it was delayed for 2.5 hours. And we all got upgraded to upper class, which is a different story, which has never happened from economy. So, you know, they just lay on those flatbeds and they fell asleep before the plane took off and they slept the entire way home. So I think coming home the latest the possible, and I think going out the earliest the possible would be what I
think. I think I totally agree, you know, doing that early morning flight and that overnight flight back if you possibly can really helps. I think we'll come on to that about sort of dealing with jet lag and the time difference. The other thing with that is obviously if you do have an overnight flight or an early flight, the kids are going to sleep. And I actually rang our airline that we went with and said, what happens if he's asleep when the food comes round? And they went, well, he misses it. And I was like, well, hang on a second, that's not right. You put him on a 9-hour flight, if he misses his food, he misses his food. And I actually spoke to cabin crew, and they said that one of the official lines is that if they're not awake during the meal service, then actually they do not have to serve the meal to that particular person, whether they pay for it or not. But they've said that more often than not, if a child is asleep, if you speak to them, they're very good. You know, they'll just keep it and then bring it out when he wakes up. So don't panic too much about them missing a meal. That's certainly something that they're very good at organising. One other tip as well that we found out is if your child is drinking milk and you're on that flight and, you know, it's an overnight flight, maybe going out, or you know your child's going to have milk during that flight, make sure you take it with you. You can take it through security as long as you taste it on the way through. And airlines don't have a stock of milk available. They just have those little cartons for your tea and your coffee. So if you are going to want to take milk for your child, make sure you do take it with you because there isn't anything on a flight.
On the milk, what you can do is that the airlines can, it depends on your cabin crew, okay, but they can be funny about storing your milk in the fridge because they say it can contaminate what's in their fridge. What they will give you if you ask is they will give you a bucket, like an ice bucket with dry ice in it, and you will put your own milk in there. Now, when the kids were little, they were on kind of like Aptamil follow-on milk. So we would take, you know, when you get a divider and you put your powdered milk in there, and we would just get them to put bottled water in their things that were sterilised, and we'll just mix it up. But if you want to take your own milk, you can ask for dry ice, and they'll give you that.
Cheers. Have you got any more tips for flying?
No, I think you've covered them all there.
Excellent. That's good. Right, let's talk about equipment then for babies and toddlers. Some people take their children out when they're as young as three or four months. And obviously they need to take a lot of sterilising equipment with them. Again, Rebecca's given us some great hints and tips here. Said, I've found sterilising bags from Boots a great way of sterilising the equipment my daughter needed. Also, take your own car seat. There's usually no charge from airlines. You know it's safe and your child recognises it. Take a spare set of clothes for kids, whatever their age, because they are going to be attracted to all water fountains. I think we'll come on to that a little bit later with attractions. And that the Disney baby centres are fantastic and have everything you need. Now, interesting point from Rebecca about taking your own car seat and doesn't usually charge. They don't charge, but again, I flew with Thompson Fly. They said, we're not going to charge you for the car seat. We will include it as part of your baggage allowance. So be aware, with some airlines, although they will allow you to take your car seat, they will include it as part of your baggage allowance. So there's some interesting points there. One thing I would certainly say, and I spoke to Craig about this before we went, if you have a car and you have access to a supermarket, only take out enough nappies for your journey. Don't shove your suitcase full of Pampers and Huggies because they are available from the US at a reasonable price. And, you know, they can save you weight. They can save you space for more souvenirs on the way back. They can also means you can pack more clothing or have that space in your luggage so you don't go over. We certainly went to Walmart down on Turkey Lake Road several times during the holidays to pick up more nappies. But don't feel that you can't get them. You know, US are very similar to us. They have very similar sort of products to us, although they're slightly different names. So you can pick up nappies very, very easily. What tips have you got, Craig?
Okay, the only other thing I'd add to that, I think Rebecca's been completely thorough there, is that depends on how old your kids are. If they are kind of at an age where they would have not a kind of a car seat, you know, the baby one, if they're on the next one up, if you hire a minivan, it's worth asking whether the minivans have built-in car seats. We've had a couple of minivans before when we were hiring cars that they have built-in car seats and the actual minivans. You don't need to take anything, which is fantastic. A proper five-point harness, you pull like a cover down off of the seat and you can strap the child in.
Okay.
The other thing is that that we were really, the first time we took Alex over there, she was only 10, 11 months, we were worried about what kind of food to buy for her, because obviously she was still on kind of baby food. Mm-hmm. And the one that we found that was kind of the closest to kind of Heinz and you know, the things you have over here, was a product by a company called Gerber, G-E-R-B-E-R. So, you know, that was a brand that was kind of a well-respected brand and was absolutely fine, and the quality of that was very good. Because a lot of things over there, you know, you're not quite sure what the brands and the makes are that you're giving it to, you know, your precious one. And you don't know whether you're doing right or wrong, but that one we kind of researched and found that was quite good.
Cheers.
I'm probably going to take it from the other aspect now of the parents, I'd say. A couple of things is, you know, take a DVD out with you. If you've already got on the plane for the thing, you're fine, because you find a lot of the American cars have DVD players. Mm-hmm. And it's great to keep your kids shut. And the main thing I'll probably say is take your sat-nav and just download an American map, because there's not going to be nothing worse than, A, you've got a child on there that might be a bit naughty. B, no matter what anyone says, after 9 hours of flight, you are naughty. And then you get behind the wheel. And the last thing you need is the hassle. You want a nice, easy drive, sat-nav. Just go to where you need to go.
Yeah, definitely. There's one last thing to talk about with regards to equipment. I'm going to look at, again, this idea, the milk idea. Now, we talked about you could take some with you, but when you get to the other side, you've never seen so many different types of milk in your life if you're stood in a supermarket. And actually, when you've got young children, most of the time it's the full-fat milk that you want to get. Now, the terms they use are slightly different. Now, I'm right in thinking that their highest milk, sort of fat content-wise, is the 5% milk, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah.
So 5% milk is your full-fat milk. So if you're over there...
Normally red as well.
It's usually red, yeah. TG Lee, I know, have it as red. I think Walmart's own is red as well. You can get all of these from the supermarkets. You can get TG Lee milk from all of the shops within Disney resorts as well. So don't panic if you haven't got a car, you can't get out. You can buy them from the resorts as well as from supermarkets. So the biggest question, I think one of the big... Well, one of the two big questions is this idea of whether or not to take your own buggy. And a lot of people are like, no, I'm not going to bother taking mine. Some people say, well, I'm going to buy one when I get there. Some people are like, I can't be bothered with the hassle. I'm just going to hire one from when I get to Disney. Well, Diane McBain and, again, Rebecca have given these two tips. It says, go at their own pace when in the parks. You will do a lot of walking, and under 5-6-year-olds will probably need some sort of pushchair. Now, it says, we plan to buy my daughter a buggy when we get there. She doesn't use one here, and I think it's quite expensive to hire them over the long term. So we will buy a cheap one from Walmart and leave it there if necessary. Juz, what do you reckon with regards to buggies? You know, what sort of age are you looking at for a child to need a buggy, bearing in mind they're walking around a theme park all day?
I'd say it's completely up to the parent. It varies. You know, we've seen kids, very big kids in buggies, and it's completely up to the parent how they go around. At the end of the day, I agree totally. It's what I said before. Go and buy yourself a buggy from Walmart, you know, max $19. You know, it's good enough to use everywhere. It'll pay for itself in a day. And at the end of the day, if you've got a kid which perhaps does get tired, it does no harm getting a buggy, because after a while they get tired, they can sit in there, they can nod off, and you can still do the parks at the same time.
Craig, wasn't this the first trip that your little Kieran didn't have a buggy? Is that right?
Yeah, it was, exactly. This was the first one. So we got two buggies actually in the house over there. One which was bought from Walmart, and one which we bought over from home, like a cheap McLaren day tripper thing. The only thing I'd say about the one you buy from Walmart, the handles on it are really quite low. So I, you know, being 6 foot tall, I found it quite hard pushing that one. It was quite painful in the back. Mm-hmm. So you know, just sit. It was a little Winnie the Pooh one. You see thousands of them everywhere, like a khaki green colour. Just, you know, sit your little one in there and just have a go in Walmart. Make sure that he's comfortable to use. But yeah, no, he's five. He was five in July, and he was quite happy walking about the park. The other thing that you can say is they are, if you want to take your own bag, I know you took yours, Adam, they are free to take on there. You take them right up to the gate. I mean, you literally go to the departure gate with them. You take them up to the plane, they put a tag on it, and when you get out the plane, they're waiting for you. So there is no real hassle to take your own if you want to. You know, you just got to put it in the boot of the car with your other luggage. But yeah, no, buy one, by all means. I think they're cheap. I have actually also seen people in airports, when you have arrived at, you know, Terminal B and you come down to the baggage claim, there's a lot of people that are coming home that leave their buggies there with a note on saying, you know, I've left my buggy. If you want it, please help yourself.
Oh, brilliant.
And I've seen them lined up against one of the back walls there. So, you know, have a little nose around when you, after 9 hours with screaming children. what you really are going to look out for, isn't it? But just bear that in mind.
I think you're dead right. Sorry, go on, you were saying.
I was going to say it's up to the parents, as Judd says. You know your kids better than anyone.
Yeah. As you said, we do take our buggy with us usually. We have a quinny, and these quinnies can fold down to something that can nearly fit in your pocket. It's that small. And we were able to take it right straight up to the gate. You know, they tagged it all up there. It's a bag that it goes in, and it was one of the first things off when we got off to the side. And it was there, ready for us, dead easy. In went Harry. Then we got him in there, ready to get the bags, and we could go straight off. I don't think I would ever hire a buggy from Disney. I think if there's an advantage to hiring a buggy from Disney, it's the size. They're a really, really decent size, and your child really can lay out in them and sort of get in a position where they're able to get some sleep. But the cost against that for me would mean that I wouldn't do it. You know, I'd much rather go and buy a buggy from somewhere like Walmart. If you're going maybe to Walt Disney World for a couple of days, you know, it's just a short weekend trip because you live in the US, then maybe hiring a buggy is worth it because you're not going to spend as much on something in Walmart, or taking your own buggy is a bit of a hassle. But certainly from my point of view, and from a lot of people from the UK, we come over for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and paying sort of $12, $13, $14 a day for a buggy is an awful lot. Also, another thing, have something distinguishable about your buggy. It's dead easy to lose it because when you put your buggy in a buggy park, there's a cast member whose job it is to move buggies up so that the stroller park doesn't build up, basically. And because they move them up, it's obviously not in the same place as it was when you left it. So have something distinguishable about it. It could be a ribbon, maybe some sort of a balloon or something on there that makes it stand out. Although saying that, Harry was brilliant at being able to pick out his buggy far quicker than I could possibly pick it out. But do be aware of that. And the last one, which is a mistake that we made, and we only made once and we won't make it again. If you have a stroller that is dark-coloured, it will attract the heat. And if it attracts the heat, the likelihood is the material on the inside of the stroller is going to get hot. And now imagine it's like you sitting down on, like getting on a slide at a park and sliding down and the slide's hot. It gives you quite a shock. The same for your child. And we did it once with Harry and we realised that if you put them, obviously it's been out in the heat, you put them straight in, you get that hot feeling and they don't like it. And then that puts them off getting back into that buggy. So either park your buggy in a shaded spot or make sure there's something you can put over it to keep the buggy cool. That's one thing I think people don't always think about when they take buggies that are a darker colour.
Although I could say that's an urban myth.
Oh, well, I certainly didn't. I certainly got very hot, but we had a black one.
I think all fabric, they've actually discovered that all fabric gets hot, and I think quite rightly. The worst thing is ever buy a leather buggy.
I can't say I've ever bought a leather buggy.
But, yeah. You know when you got back into your hire car with that leather, don't you?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
On buggy costs, though, just to kind of explain what Disney charge, these are a couple of years old now, spring hourly, but a single buggy is $15. A double buggy is $31 a day. Now, wow. They do length of stay passes for buggy rentals, which is 13 for a single and 27 for each day. Right. But there is a company actually called Orlando Stroller Rentals where you could rent, you know, a really nice buggy from them a lot cheaper than you could from Disney if you wanted to. But to be honest with you, if you've got a nice buggy, just take your own. It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, we said a minute ago we were going to talk about how to get over your child, you know, this jet lag, this time difference idea. And what we did, because we had a morning flight out, and what ended up being an overnight flight back, we were delayed for 4 hours at the airport. We got Harry up early, like 5 o'clock, even though our flight wasn't until 10, because he was up and he was tired. And that meant that he slept on the plane. And this wasn't because we wanted a nice, easy life. We wanted him to sleep for 4 hours on the plane so we could watch telly and read a book. It actually meant because he had that long sleep in the middle of the day, he was able to stay up later in the evening, then having that knock-on effect, well, supposed knock-on effect, for him to stay later in bed the next day. What about you guys? What are your sort of ways of getting people out of, getting young children out of this routine that they get when they're in the UK?
I think it's funny, isn't it? Because I think, in reality, you know, we keep ours up as long as we could the first day. But if anything, it's them who actually adjust better than we do. Because, of course, during the day, they will nod off. They will have the rest. And it's also adults who tend to have real problems with this adjustment of time, mm-hmm. whereas to them, in reality, time, there's no concept of time. You know, it's light and dark, and they sleep when they sleep. So I find less about that. I think they cope a lot better than we do. The only thing I remember is at 3 o'clock the first morning there, they will be wide awake, and therefore yes. so will you.
Well, that takes on to my next point, actually. Be prepared for that first early morning. I was sort of anticipating it happening, and then suddenly at 4:30 a.m. the following morning, I had little Harry saying, "Look at me, I'm wide awake, and I'm ready to get up now," of which Mummy wasn't ready to get up at all. So Daddy got up at 4:30 in the morning. We watched some TV, we played some games, and what we did is we made sure we had our swimming stuff out, because I think Zoe went and got into Harry's bed to get out of the way, and we stayed up in our room. And at 7 a.m, as soon as the swimming pool opened, me and Harry went down to the pool, and I think we spent nearly an hour and a half in the pool up until sort of 8:30 time, and then went back and everyone was ready to start thinking about getting up and getting themselves sorted for the day. So be prepared for that first early morning. It is likely to happen, you know, although their body clock has adjusted somewhat, they're still going to be up early. You know, Craig, do you find that with your kids?
I do, yeah. I think what we you know, on the flight over, they want to enjoy the flight and play and everything, but we do kind of threaten them as much as you can as a parent to say, you've really got to have some sleep. And, you know, we make sure they have at least an hour and a half going over there. And it's normally, you know, if you want to have a swim when you get there, you've got to have a sleep now. And they're pretty good. They do normally sleep for, you know, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours on the way out. And then when we get there, you know, by the time we get to the house, we're lucky that they have their own bedrooms and they feel quite comfortable and they fit in quite easily. They might have a little swim and then they'll go to bed. But, you know, it is 4:30, and you're absolutely right. It's the time they wake up. And I'm awake, Debs. For some reason, the women cope a lot better, don't they? And they just seem to sleep all the way through. But yeah. I'm up with them. And then, you know, Debs will arise when she feels like. And then we'll probably just go out and get some shopping, actually, because the stores are open really early. So we'll go and stock up on food and then, you know, come back and take it easy that day. But I think it is just making sure they have at least some sleep on the plane. Otherwise, you know, you're arriving at midnight, 1 o'clock, and they're just going to be completely irritable. And you know, you're going to lose your temper probably easier with them than you normally would because you're tired and irritable. So it's no good for anyone. So let them have a little sleep.
Cheers. Have you got any more tips?
Yeah, actually, just think about it then. Something I did learn from my first time is the first evening you're there, buy some junk food. If you're at a hotel, there's a small hotel shop. Because what will happen is you will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with them and they will be hungry and there's nowhere open for you to buy anything.
Oh, that's a very good point.
The old bits and pieces just for a sugar rush, and you will need it as well, is when you're up with them at 3 o'clock, that first night they'll be able to have something and watch telly with you or whatever, but they need to see that bit of sugar back into them.
That's a very, very good point.
Yeah, good point.
That's something I didn't think about. So let's move on to transport then and talk about this idea of getting around while you're there. And again, Diane has given us a tip which says, hire a car. It means you can get about so much easier. Leave the parks when you want to. Saves hanging about on buses. We hire a car even when we stay on site. Is this something you recommend? Does staying on site mean you hire a car, or do you use the Disney transportation, especially when your children were younger?
We would always hire a car, and I think this proved it, and I was going to mention it with dealing with the heaters, the fact that the first time anyone ever goes, you cram way too much in your schedule.
Yeah.
And we immediately had that kid with a protein spill in the middle of Epcot. And because we did everything too hard and too fast, and that was the day wiped out. And things like that, when you've got kids, you sometimes need to say, and the kids can be bouncy 1 minute and wiped out the next, as you go, let's go back, let's go and chill.
Yeah.
So even on the Disney property, we've always said, yeah, and we always do the standard, I don't know if you're going to mention it in a bit anyway, the standard morning, lunchtime, and early afternoon back to the thing, and even if the kids go and have a sleep or we have a chill, and then back out again. So that car gives you that flexibility.
Definitely, I completely agree with you. I say we usually hire a car, and again, we did this time. But one thing to think about is the size of the car that you're going to hire. Now, the car we had actually had 4 adults and a child in it. And we had one of these Ford Escape sort of 4x4 big beasts, I suppose, compared to what we have over here. And think about the size of the car in the fact that if you have many adults, remember you're going to have a car seat in there as well. Don't get something too small, because I can tell you now, the ride will be extremely uncomfortable every time you go anywhere between the parks. So if you know you're going to be going on long journeys in your vehicle, think about the size of the car you're going to hire. Also, I've also already mentioned, take that small collapsible buggy. It's really useful when you're getting on and off Disney buses, something that's easy to collapse and put up, because a lot of the times they ask you to collapse them on buses when it's busy. But they do allow you to keep buggies up on the monorail, so you don't need to collapse them to go from the parks to the parking lot, but you will need again to collapse them when you're getting on parking lot trams. So all of the Disney transportation as well, there's different elements there where you are going to need to keep them up or put them down, so be aware of those as well. Any other transport tips from you guys?
All I would say is that I didn't miss not taking the buggy up and down on the trams this time, to be fair with you. And I wouldn't want to put anybody, you know, those of you that have never been and are worried about driving over there, you know, you don't have to have a car. It's just preferable to have a car.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if I was on Disney property, it's especially if I was, you know, jammy enough to be on one of the monorail resorts, you can quite easily get about without a car. It just restricts you going out. And, you know, if you've got free dining there, you might not want to go anywhere. So you can do it without a car. But, you know, all the times I've been with kids, we've always had a car. And I just think it just gives you far more choice and options. And I think when you say about the size of the car, one thing that people also need to bear in mind is getting the luggage in the back of it. You know, you might think, oh, there's four adults, that's great, we can have a, you know, an intermediate car, but you're going to get all your cases in the boot.
Yes, so just pick up on the car bit as well. When you go to the garage and show your car you've got, if you're not quite happy that it's not big enough for you, ask the person who's got it, say, what other cars are available in my class?
Yeah.
Because what you tend to find is you can get a sports car, which is smallish, in exactly the same class as you get a lower end 4x4 or the big station wagons. So you can say to them, that's what's been allocated, but what else is in the class? Because I don't think that's big enough for my family and the luggage coming back.
They
and,
are very
you
good
know, they are quite good. Yeah, and you can do that right in the garage when you see it.
Yes, they are really good.
Good point.
And, we were actually given a choice of vehicles that we wanted to get when we arrived, and we chose that one because of the size of it and there was plenty of space. But yes, they are very, very good at doing that for you. So definitely sort of look at that. Right, accommodation. This is a big one for me, really. And the way we did it this time, I was really pleased that we did because of the size of the accommodation we have. Diana says here, if possible, stay on site. It makes popping back to the room for a rest or a swim in the pool a lot easier. And I sort of do and don't agree with that one. I think, yes, if you're staying again on a monorail resort line, it's dead easy to get back to your hotel. Not always so easy late at night if you're getting onto a bus with a lot of other people. We certainly stayed off property this time, and whether you're staying on or off property and you have got a young child with you, someone who's going to need to go to sleep earlier, I would always, from now, if I've got a small child with me, hire a villa or an apartment. And the reason I do this is because they would have their own room as part of the actual villa apartment, and you're not just sharing a single room with your child, which means that, you know, come 7:30, 8:00, you know your child needs to go to bed early tonight, you go back to your room, and then you are stuck in your room in semi-darkness from 8:00 onwards with a telly on at a volume that you strain to be able to hear so they don't wake up. Whereas because we were in an apartment this time, we had here, Harry had his own room, he was able to go into that room on his own, and we were able to shut the door, and we were able to then enjoy, you know, sitting around, talking in the living room, watching some television, things like that, without having to ruin, not ruin, but dampen the rest of the evening because our child was asleep.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the motels, I've done all that. I've got a family of five, you know, so the little one used to sort of sleep on a duvet on the floor or whatever. You know, so we've done that. And then, as you quite rightly say, you go to a villa and it's mind-blowing, you know, the amount of space you've got. I think sometimes the problem with staying on site, actually, bizarrely enough, is you actually spend too much time on the site because the hotels are that well-themed.
Yeah.
You stay off the site, then, you know, you tend to come back. And most of the ones on US 27, you know, 192 and all that lot, you only, 20 minutes away tops. It's not hard to drive there and drive back again. The roads are fairly clear, but I would always agree. You know, I've had the choice these days. I would always go for a villa because it also lets you have that chill factor. Away from everyone, you're away from the parks. If you get one at the pool, straight in there, and everyone gets a chill zone.
Yeah, definitely. Craig?
Well, I'm always going to go villa.
I wonder why that might be.
Funny that. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we always do stay in a hotel when we go there just for a couple of nights just to do something. And, you know, the one thing you hit absolutely on the head is unless you've got a suite or you've got a separate room or you've got a family suite or something, you know, when the kids go to bed and, you know, it could be, I don't know, as early as 8:00 if you've had a busy day, 8, 9 o'clock, whatever, you know, you are either sitting out on the balcony or you're just sitting there in silence reading a book or doing something until they've dropped off. So, you know, really try. If you want to stay in a hotel, and that's absolutely fine to do so, try and get something, if you've got small children, with two rooms or a separate sleeping area or, you know, whatever you can afford and get. But I just think that a villa offers you so much more. So I would always, you know, say a villa, not just because I have one and I don't even rent mine, so it's not even a business thing. But it just offers you so much more. It's a home away from home.
Yeah.
You've got more space, you've got more rooms, you've got your own private pool. In fact, actually, one of the first times since we had the villa, we went back to a hotel. The kids didn't like it because there was a lot more people in the pool and they didn't have as much room as they did. So It's funny how they're fine now, but it's funny how they got used to it. Mm. So, yeah, no, I'd say Villa.
Just any other things combination-wise, any more tips?
No, I think we've covered it. We're almost all saying if you can and possibly do it, go for Villa. And let's be honest, you know, there's no better time this last sort of 2 years to actually get a really true price Villa.
Yeah, definitely. One of the couple of other things that I've sort of written down here. Firstly, if you are staying within a room rather than in a villa with a kitchenette, try and get an in-room refrigerator. They're great at storing ice lollies and, again, the milk that you might need if you've got younger children. But there's nothing, you know, better than coming in from a very humid, hot day outside, opening the fridge and getting ice lollies out for everyone and for your kids as well. I've always stayed at resorts with a pool. Believe it or not, yes, there are some hotels and resorts within Orlando that do not have swimming pools. You know, never underestimate that 10-minute swim in the morning or after visiting the parks to sort of cool everybody down. And the final one, which sort of does link to accommodation, but also, I suppose, links to equipment to do with babies. One of the things we find, and especially with Harry, I don't know with this variety, you find this with your kids as well, that he really feels comforted if he sleeps under a duvet or a blanket that he usually sleeps under, whether it's a strange bed or not. And we actually took Harry's duvet from home out with us, and he slept under that. And believe it or not, it made a huge amount of difference about whether he slept well at night, because he had that comfort of knowing it was his own duvet and his own pillowcase that he slept under.
We've had that with our kids when they went out. They always took their own teddy that they slept with. And I think you're quite right, because there's that smell and bond. So they always had a teddy that was constantly theirs, which went... Actually, they went around the world, because they went on every flight they went on. And I think that helps, as you say.
You said earlier that you got some tips for dealing with the heat. So let's move on to that next, Juz. And what things have you got written down there with regards to this dealing with the heat?
Don't go to Florida. It's too hot.
I suppose we have covered a lot of this with the beat and the heat segment, but there's a few things I've got here that are slightly different to do with young children.
What I wanted to sort of pick up is you know, something that, you know, I do rugby coaching as well, something we drill into sort of the parents as well. Dehydration in kids is a major issue. Mm. Some facts here, 73% of the time, dehydration will lead to hospitalisation.
Right.
You should have, if possible, electrolyte replacement drinks. Things you can get them in powder forms. I think in the UK, I think we do stuff like Rehydrate, which is sugar and minerals with sodium, potassium, chloride, and electrolytes. These are designed for toddlers. I'm not talking just adults. I mean, adults, I'd always say, you know, take something like the Gatorade Hydrate Crystals for yourself, because, once again, very easy for adults to get sunstroke, because we're very arrogant and things aren't affecting us, and then we're ill. But kids dehydrate incredibly quickly, you know. Right. If they're thirsty, you're too late. So things like Rehydrate, you can get them in the UK, take them over there. Walmart stocks shelves full of it.
I can't emphasise more just how good Gatorade is as well. It genuinely does work. And I know I drank it, Zoe drank it, Harry drank some of it as well at times when he was starting to get quite hot. But Gatorade is certainly a wonderful thing. What else have you got, Craig, about this idea of dealing the heat with young children?
Well, this is the first time that actually we bought the Gatorade sachets based on our Beat the Heat segment that Juz mentioned. And the kids absolutely love them. So what we would do is, and this is another tip that a lot of people don't know, you see people queuing up paying $2.50 for a bottle of water when you could actually just ask them for a cup of water and they'll give it to you. So we were getting, you know, Alex would love going up there in her best American accent and ask for 4 cups of ice water. And she would get those. She'd bring them over. We'd bring them over. We'd put Juzzy's Gatorade in, shake it up. And, you know, that was fantastic. So that is absolutely one of the key ones. I think the other thing is that a lot of people don't do is I see so many people walking about with their kids without hats on, and put a hat on them, and that keeps the sun off and keeps them cool. I think the other thing is just go back to our episode on Beat the Heat, because there were so many great tips in there that, you know, we do use, and I use, you know, the water in the backpack that we mentioned, the magic call that you guys mentioned. I think there are that was a great episode for dealing with the heat, and I think, you know, it is absolutely important, because they will burn, they will get hot, and they will just completely and utterly flake out, and you know, it can ruin the rest of your day.
Yeah, definitely. And Diane's also said, sent in another couple of tips here, which is plenty of water, sun cream and shade. And if they hit meltdown stage, just call it a day for a rest, or at least for a few hours, even if it means missing an ADR, which I know for some people is sort of a big no-no. But, you know, if your kids are really at that stage, it's no fun eating or trying to eat with a child in full stage strop mode. And I think that's completely true. We've already talked about the idea of buying refillable drinks bottles, using the drinking fountains that are around the parks and the ice water. Freezing juice we've talked about. But there was one thing that caught me completely by surprise on my last trip, which was we went into the supermarket to get some cordial juice for drinks.
Oh, I see.
Harry has it. And we spent forever walking around Walmart going, I can't find cordial. There is no cordial.
Yeah.
There's crystals.
The only place you'll put
and there's fruit juice, but I couldn't find cordial. And eventually, and I've got to admit to this, we went and found the UK aisle in Walmart and bought bottles of Robinson's juice. Yes, it was a little bit more expensive.
About $5.
But it was a lifesaver because Harry drinks a lot of this Robinson's blackcurrant juice, and we bought a few bottles of that. And again, we took that home, we froze that, and he drank that throughout the day. But be aware that they do not sell cordial juice. It's either crystals or it's fruit juice over in America.
Yeah, they tend to have them pre-made, so you buy it in the... We tend to buy the two-gallon bottles of whether it's blackcurrant or whatever.
That's
it's
right.
Pre-done. You sort of look at it and go, oh, but it's really nice. It's very cheap. It's probably found out it's very cheap as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is reasonably cheap.
I mean, we were buying Snapple or Ocean Spray and stuff, but yeah, if you go to... you might have found this, Adam, if you'd gone to kind of the Walmarts on the 192 and stuff, you know, they, as you walk in, you know you're kind of at one aimed at the Brits, because as you go in, you've got Weet-Bix on the left, and then you've got the Robinson lined up, and they've got ketchup and baked beans.
That's them all lined up now, I think, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Now I take the rise out of those. You know, you're at the British Walmart, but you know, if you want Robinson's, and you're not going to get cordial over there, you're going to have to pay $4 and buy a bottle of it. But to be warned, you know, I'd stick it in your fridge because it doesn't particularly last well in the heat.
No, it doesn't. That's very, very true. Right. So let's look at this planning your holiday idea. So you know, you're thinking about going, you're beginning to plan all these ideas and all these things for your trip. What are the sort of things you should be thinking about? Again, I actually got quite a few tips from people for this one. Diane again said, don't try and do everything. You'll only tie yourself and them out, and you won't enjoy it as much. Always gives you an excuse to come back. If you are tense, so will they. Just relax and chill as much as possible. After all, if they act like the children from hell in public, what are the chances you're actually going to see anyone who witnessed it again? Very good point. Take plenty of breaks, especially in the middle of the day, and never put a leash disguised as a teddy bear on your child. That was from Brian from Reedy Creek Radio. I think obviously he has an experience there with teddy bear type reins. Take the parks at their speed. Don't try and cram too much into the day. Either do an early morning or a late night. And if you do both, make sure they get some rest and relaxation throughout the day. That was Rebecca. She's also said, don't assume that they aren't going to remember the trip. Despite what others think, my daughter vividly remembers playing in Barney's backyard and making music on the floor, something we didn't capture on video or by photo. So it's not something she thinks she remembers, but she really does. That sort of prompted me, this idea of take plenty of batteries and plenty of tapes for your cameras. We got so many great candid photos and video of Harry because we already always had it out, knowing that we had plenty of battery and plenty of film to keep us going. You know, don't ever miss out on those magical moments because you aren't prepared for them. They can crop up at any moment. So yeah, making sure batteries for cameras, making sure you've got plenty of those. Also, one of the things I think I can say I'm partially guilty of is remembering that this holiday is just as much for your child as it is for you. You know, I went full-blown ahead, planning this, that, the other, doing all this is going to be amazing, and then actually stood back and realised, actually, yeah, I'll enjoy this and I'll be able to cope with this full-on, but will Harry? And realising that actually he's not necessarily going to cope with the same sort of pace as what we used to with our small child, and we had to scale that back. But also, Disney do offer park maps that are specifically geared towards young children. You can get them off the web and download them, and they focus on specific attractions that are suitable for young children. So have a look for those and grab those out, because they are really well worth looking at before you go. What do you sort of do when you go through a planning routine for taking kids with you?
I leave them at home because they just get in the way and set things down. I think, yeah, what I've learned is, you know, we plan like mad. You know, Evan's done down to 5 to 8, but we always have, if it's a 14-day holiday or whatever, we'll have a 3 or 4 days just of floaters. That way, we know we can move things around, or if things happen, we're not going to put anything into place. Do not try and do commando. As I said before, we always do morning, come back round about the lunchtime, have a break, go back in for late afternoon or evening to do that. And some of the times, you know, you hit these rides and you think they're great for kids, and the kids, exactly what she's saying there about Barney's backyard, I suppose. Do you remember the sillier types of things? So Universal, there's Curious George, which is just a massive runaround, get wet.
Which is absolutely amazing. I got soaked and I didn't want to, but I love it.
Exactly. Hollywood Studio, you've got Honey, I Shrunk the Kids Adventureland. Yeah. You know, even down to if you go on to Celebration, you get soaking wet with the things. It's stupid things like that that kids remember because they giggle so much over it, rather than going on a teacup or a little ride.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's great times as well. You just sit there and there's a lot more. I think you get a lot more sometimes, not necessarily being on a ride with kids, but sat there whether you're videoing or just sat there watching your kid giggle, interact with the children and disappear and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's an interesting point that you've just made there about not planning too much in one go. One of the things we did this time was we actually said the very first full day. We'd arrived the day before. We'd arrived about 2-3 o'clock, I think we landed. We spent the whole afternoon just doing a bit of shopping and not doing a lot else. And actually, the first full day, our plan was to go to Magic Kingdom when we were ready. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It was no, we're going to go by 2 o'clock. It was just when we were ready, we go to Magic Kingdom. I think we arrived 1-2 o'clock that day and did sort of part of the evening and came home early because that was what we were ready for and that's what we knew Harry could cope with. So it is about, you know, really planning out, thinking about things carefully. Craig, what about you? I know you obviously go for slightly longer holidays and don't do necessarily as much in one go. But how do you go about planning your holidays?
I think one of the things actually that you picked up on, Madam, that's really important is that you're sharing this holiday with your children. So, yeah, whilst, you know, you want to enjoy all of the rides you want to go on and we can come on how you can do that, you know, this is something that's creating memories. You're going to the Magic Kingdom because it is the most magical place on earth and it's for their faces and to see. So what I tend to do now is, you know, we're lucky that we've been many times and, you know, I've been on everything that I want to go on and I'll sit down with the kids, you know, saying, look, we're going to go to Magic Kingdom on Friday and, you know, what sort of rides do you definitely want to do? And we'll kind of, you know, plan the things I want to do. We don't do everything every time we go and they'll say, oh, can we do this time, Daddy? Can we go and make sure we see this? There's always some that they always want to do. But, you know, like last time we didn't do Peter Pan's Flight, we didn't do much Fantasyland, so I know when we go back in October they'll want to do those. And, you know, we'll make sure, and Alex will make me write out a little list of things and she'll go around and say, oh, we've done that one now, Daddy, we can kind of knock that one off. And they've kind of planned it between them, what they want to do, and then I know that they're happy because they've done everything. And, you know, we'll say when we come into the end of the day, we're going to do kind of these three more things and anything else you want to do, and we're going to go home or we can go out and grab a pizza or something. So I think it's, you know, I share now the planning with them. That's what I'm getting at now. Is, you know, it's their holiday as much as ours. I really enjoy just, you know, seeing them seeing them enjoy it. You know, they're at the age now where they can go on some of the roller coasters and so on. So it's just making sure that, you know, they're getting what they want. I'd hate to drag them home and say, oh, Daddy, we didn't go on that ride and you said we would and you said we'd do this. You know, if I say we're only doing these and we'll do those the next time, then, you know, we can do those the next time.
Juz, have you got any more sort of bits and pieces that you can think of with regards to planning?
No, I think the emails you've got and what you said there, I think we covered a lot of that, haven't we?
Right, let's head into the rides and attractions side of things then and see what people have said with regards to those. We've had quite a few comments again. Dan says, we made the mistake of taking them on Journey to Atlantis for their very first ride, aged 4. We've forgotten how intense it was and they met the height requirement. Needless to say, they were very wary of any ride after that. Start small and build them up. Make full use of Fastpass to save waiting in queues too long. Also, the child swap, so you can do some of the bigger rides. It means riding on your own, but you still get to do them. Parent swap, make the most of it, and then you don't feel left out for not being able to do the rides. That's from Rebecca. Also, other things such as make use of the Kidcot stops in Epcot and Animal Kingdom, and also the small playgrounds. They're great to just let them run around and recharge for 30 minutes or so. There's also Playhouse Disney, which is one of the best attractions for little ones. We spent a full morning with Barney at Universal. And if your child doesn't like the bangs in Wishes, but you still want to see it, go to the Polynesian and watch it from across the water, which I think is one of Juz's favourite tips. But with regards to rides and attractions, so what sort of things do you think are really important to remember?
I think know your child. I mean, although the contradiction is I took mine, which he was tall enough to go on Dinosaur, and he cried afterwards, you know. Because, as well, I think what you need to do is check your boards, check your podcasts. Some of them, like Dinosaur, you don't realise how intense that ride is from the outside. You think, oh, it's going to be a Disney ride, and it's quite intense. I think you need to have that information up front so you can make an informed judgment, which means doing a bit of research on what you're doing and what you're going for. But apart from that, I agree with everything. Parent swap, kid swap, I mean, that's great. Kidcot, I absolutely love at Epcot. That takes, you know, we like Walking Around World Showcase and they like doing that side of it. But, like, everything you've said there, absolutely fantastic suggestions.
Craig?
Yeah, I agree with all of those things. I think that you've got to know your child. So I could tell you a quick funny story. So Kieran was four. We took him on Territory. He met the height requirement. He, you know, he wanted to go on it. He'd seen Alex and us go on it many times. And, you know, I explained the ride to him, and he was fine with it. So we go on the ride. He's funny. He loves it. He screams. He puts his arms up. We get off it, and I say, did you like that, Kieran? No. Well, do you want to go on it again? Yes. You want to go on again? Yes. I didn't like the ghosts, Daddy. I didn't like the ghosts. So we had to make up when the ghost came out. We all shouted out boo. But he was absolutely fine. So, you know, you've got to know your kids. The rider switch is a fantastic, fantastic thing. You know, you could utilise that. And you can even probably cheat and use it when there's no fast passes available, which we managed to do for Test Track. And I think in Epcot, the other thing, you know, it costs $10, but buy them a passport. And they can walk around the world and they can get that signed. And, you know, you go to China and they write their name in Chinese. And, you know, that's quite educational. They really enjoyed it and they love doing that. So, you know, I think, you know, the listeners have covered that. Guys covered that pretty well. So yeah.
I think you've got a really good point there about knowing your child's limits, because actually, although your child's limits are at one point at the beginning of a holiday, it doesn't mean they're going to be at the same point at the end. When we first arrived, you know, getting Harry to sit down on It's a Small World was a struggle. He just wouldn't sit. He wanted to be held so he could watch it. And then as the trip went on, you know, he sat on Buzz Lightyear in between us and watched that, or he sat on some of the other rides within Fantasyland, and we, you know, One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish at Universal, he sat and got wet on that. And actually, because his limits stretched and he got used to it and he knew what was going on, by the end of the holiday, we'd taken him to Busch Gardens and taken him on the 40-foot drop log flume, bearing in mind he's 3.5, and he absolutely... No, we didn't go on that, not on the Sheikah, no. 40-foot drop log flume that he absolutely loved. We took him on the Barnstormer roller coaster towards the end of the holiday, which again he absolutely loved. He just clapped at the end of it because he liked it. So it's sort of building them up, I suppose. It is knowing your child's limits and knowing when your child's limits are going to grow. Also, even if it means jumping around the park, make sure you visit rides for yourself and for your kids equally. You know, after 5 rides that you couldn't go on, I think I'd be quite cranky at the fact that I've watched my mum and dad go on 5 different rides while I've sat in my buggy and I've not been on anything, and I think, you know, sharing that out. But one of the biggest, most important ones, I think, with regards to rides and attractions is well, there's two. With regards to rides, one of the things I saw was that a little girl wanted to go on Big Thunder Mountain, and she came running up to the attraction. She's like, come on, Daddy, come on, I want to go on, I'm really excited. And she got there and she wasn't tall enough. And she just was sort of distraught that she can go on it. And it's just know what your child's height is so that you don't get them. Yeah. Don't build them up on being able to go onto an attraction that they can't go on. Disney are very good. They do offer something, although they don't really announce it, which is like a little certificate that if you're not tall enough when you go, you can take it back with you next time and go straight to get straight on like Fastpass style. But yeah, be aware of your child's height and what they can and cannot visit, because it saves those moments where you suddenly go, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you could, but you can't. My other one is for attractions, especially for shows. There's nothing worse than sitting in the middle of a row with your child and them suddenly deciding they really don't like it and you not be able to get out without upsetting all the other people in the middle. We would always try and sit either on the end of a row or in an area where we can get straight out to the exit. We went to see It's Tough to Be a Bug, and Harry did not like it in the slightest. Because we were right at the end of a row, we were able to stand straight up and walk straight out the exit without upsetting anybody at all. So that would be my other one about sitting on the end of the row for shows as well.
Can I just say to everybody, you know, don't let your kids, It's Tough to Be a Bug. I've never been in there once where parents haven't walked out. It is intensely dark and very intense with spiders and things creeping up behind you. Kids do not like it, nor do I.
Well, I really like it. I thought, so it was like, oh, no, he won't like it. I was like, it'll be fine, it'll be fine. You know, it's got Flick and Hopper and he loves all those sort of things. And then suddenly it went dark and the spiders came and I thought, oh, yeah, okay, this is a mistake. So we went outside and looked at the animals and the waterfalls instead, which he much preferred to being sat in a dark theatre. Right, one of the biggest fears, I think, for parents is taking your child to Walt Disney World and them seeing the characters and immediately bursting into tears. And for me, there was the massive fear of taking Harry and just absolutely hating the characters, especially as we booked 2 character breakfasts. So, again, Rebecca says, there may be better with characters whose faces you can see, i.e. the princesses, who are sort of normal size, than you are with others. How did you get over this whole sort of idea of meeting characters that were maybe slightly different to sort of humans that they couldn't cope with?
I think, you know, we've never had an issue with it. And, you know, we've always done the character breakfast because I think that's the best place to see him rather than the parks. And I think that if the child sees how bouncy you are with the characters, so this is not parents sat there, you know, necessarily digging for the camera and not being interactive. Get interactive with the character yourself. Kids then will feel very at ease by the fact that their parents are a buddy-buddy with this character, no matter how weird they look. It's parents who sit there going, oh, you know, he's here, it's for you, and shove a kid at it, rather than actually being involved. And you find, you know, Tigger and all that lot will come and get you, and Eeyore and Pooh will get you if you just sat there ignoring them anyway. So you might as well get up and be enjoy yourself.
That's very true. I think one of the things that I realised was that some children are scared just purely for the sheer size of the characters compared to what they see on television. Because if you think about it, you see Mickey Mouse on television and he's reasonably small, he's not too big, and then suddenly you see him in real life and he's, you know, 10 times the size of what he is on TV. Kids can get quite scared. You know, it's sit back, let them see, test them out on the parade, sit them at the front of the parade and see how they are with open to watching them as they walk past and then begin to approach them. We were really lucky that Harry absolutely loved the characters. No matter who it was, he would run up to them, give them a massive hug and a big kiss, and it wasn't a problem for him. But certainly if you do have children who might be a little bit scared, just be wary. Don't throw them straight in, as you say, because, you know, that could be have the knock-on effect for when you go on next trips. Craig, how about you and your kids?
Get a bigger television at home.
Oh, don't get a big television at home.
I was quite worried about ours, for the only reason was that they've both had, since the day they were born, a little comfort toy. Alex has had a Mickey, Kieran's had a Donald Duck, and obviously they're the small ones. And so to kind of meet the real one at the park, I was worried. But they, you know, they just absolutely just fell in love with them, and there was no worries at all. You know, life-size characters. So they've been fine. We've been really lucky. But we've never, you know, said, oh, look, there's so-and-so. You haven't got him in your book. Go and get him. You know, they're the ones that have been saying, oh, can we go and see so-and-so and get their autograph? You know, yeah, of course you can. But we've never gone out seeking people for them to find. So, you know, it's done at their enjoyment and at their pace.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's now move on to meals. Obviously, they're a very important part of a trip because obviously you need to eat. There's obviously the types of being able to just go up to stands, going for counter service, going for table service, and sort of the difference have been dealing with children as part of that. Diane says, with R2, the mood definitely depends on their appetite. If not eaten for a while, they are monsters, and we kept them happy with regular snacks. Two of my, I think, tips are, A, don't go out to dinner too late. B, don't expect everyone around you to be quiet just because your child is asleep. And I've got a story that goes with this, and I've told you guys before. We went to a place called Chili's, which is actually outside of Disney. We'd gone for sort of a 7:45 dinner. We'd been, not done a lot during the day, and we decided we'd go for a nice meal. Harry was sat quite happily in his high chair, and we were enjoying our food. And then a family came in, an American family came in behind us. Now, we were coming towards the end of our meal. Harry was getting a little bit grouchy. He wasn't too bad, but we were trying to keep him entertained, keep him happy while we waited for the bill to come through. And he was sat there laughing quite happily. There was a table next to us with a couple who had come out for a romantic meal who absolutely loved him, were laughing along with him. But this family that came in had brought a baby. This baby was probably only maybe 3 or 4, 5, 6 months old and was fast asleep. Now, bearing in mind, this was 20 to 10 in the evening. Okay, 20 to 10 in the evening, bringing your little tiny baby out for dinner. And Harry was sat there, you know, we're just keeping him happy, waiting for the bill to come through. And this family turned around and said, can you please keep your child quiet? Our baby is trying to sleep. And immediately, we were like, hang on a second, you know, it is 20 to 10 in the evening, you're bringing a baby out at that time. So don't take your child out too late, because, you know, it's that idea of if they do fall asleep, you can't turn around to the entire restaurant, and you guys have eaten the Chili's, you know what sort of atmosphere it is. It's quite a loud atmosphere as it is. You can't stand up and make an announcement that your child is asleep. Please could everybody eat very, very quietly. So that was one of the big things that happened on our holiday that was sort of a bit grr for me. What else have you guys got?
I think, you know, from my perspective, you know, and I'm not going to not disagree with this, we tend to tweet main meals outside of Disney, simply because the kids' meals tend to have a better selection. I mean, Disney take the philosophy that all kids eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and all of them, since they were go, have always eaten mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah.
We're you'll find that any buffet you go to, there'll be loads of mac and cheese and peanut butters. The kids' meals are ever so slightly different. You know, our kids just eat chicken fingers or fish fingers, you know.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you get a better choice outside the parks, not knocking them, you know. On the flip side of it, I love the kids' meatballs they do on buffets, and I just push the kids out the way and eat them.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Craig?
I think one of my things is, and you know, I don't want to kind of sit here all judgmental, but I just don't understand people that go out at 9 or 10 o'clock at night with kids for dinner. You know, I have it at lunchtime, or you know, we would go out for dinner at 6 o'clock, and the kids are still falling asleep. You know, you wouldn't eat that late at home with them, so why do it whilst you're on holiday? Again, you're kind of, in my mind, putting yourself above what your kids' needs are. You know, they need to eat probably more than you do, so you know, try and do it at a reasonable time for them. And when you get people like you, Adam, in the restaurant, you know, that's how I would have kept my temper. I think I would have let them have.
I did, you know, keep my temper. I won't tell you what my dad said, but I certainly kept my temper.
Told us, but don't tell anyone else.
The
other thing to do, when you order your dinner, you know, some of the restaurants are pretty good, and they'll say, oh, should we bring the children's meals up straight away? You know, have them bring the children's meals up as soon as they're ready.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to get salad sometimes, or you're going to have, you know, some bread or whatever, first of all. And then they're bringing the kids, you know, you're bringing there 45 minutes before the kids get their food. So have them bring them up straight away. That's the other thing I'd say.
Any other tips from you, Juz?
No, that's true. Take them to the sommelier. The kids love the breadsticks there and keeps them going for them.
There you go, cheap meal. A couple of things I put. First is use the character meals as a good way to meet characters. Food's brilliant, really is. Just eat as much as you want. I've never eaten so much in my life as I did when we went to Chef Mickey's. Also, Disney's offers these kids' meals at counter service restaurants, and it says up there that you have a choice between vegetables or fruit and fruit juice, etc. If your child is the sort of person who doesn't eat a huge amount of vegetables and fruit, or will eat it but won't have it every meal, you can substitute it for fries if you want to. You know, we did it on the occasional meal because we knew that Harry'd had enough of eating vegetables and fruit. It just said in the small print, so be aware that you don't have to necessarily have those veg options. Disney are very, very good at counter service restaurants to actually change your order slightly if you need to. And also, and I think this is the big one, if you've got a child that doesn't have a particularly large appetite, then don't always order them a meal, because the portion sizes in many restaurants are so big, you could easily siphon off some of your food and give it to your child. We went to Perkins a few mornings for breakfast, and very rarely did we order Harry a breakfast, purely for the fact that we had so much food, we could ask for a plate and put some of our food on there, and he would quite happily have a hearty breakfast, and we would still eat well as well. So that's something definitely to think about as well as that.
Right. Okay, I'll give you two more quickly. Sorry, Adam. First one is pay no attention to what they say the ages are for kids' meals. You can order them whenever you like. Debbie even orders kids' meals sometimes, so I wouldn't worry about that. And the second thing, this is the only trip, actually, this August, with Alex being 7, Kieran 5, they've actually had their own kids' meal. A lot of the time, they would split a meal. So I'd order one kids' meal, it'd be enough for the pair of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't think you've got to buy them both a meal.
Okay, thank you. Right, let's go for the big question. This is I suppose, one question that plagues any parent. What is the right age to take your child for their first trip? Now, Craig Williams sent us an email, and it says this: my tip is, many people spend years pondering what is the right age to take their kids. The trouble is that, by the time they make up their mind, their kids are at uni or married. My two were 2 and 4 on our first trip, and it was a magical time. Sure, there were things we couldn't do, like the bigger rides without baby swap, but the trade-off is seeing the magic written all over their faces. Having taken my kids at ages ranging from 2 to 14, I can say there is no correct age. Go when you can afford to, or risk wishing you could turn back time. If you take very small kids, as long as you plan accordingly, every trip will be special and different from the last. So don't worry when to go, just worry about when you can't go. That's a bigger problem. I think my point of view is this: I don't think there is a correct age to take your child. The correct age is when the parents feel comfortable with taking their kids. That's all I can say, really. We took Harry to Disneyland Paris. He went 3 times in his first year. And I think it is, really, if you are comfortable as a parent to take your kids, take them. There is no right or wrong age to take your children.
I agree totally. At the end of the day, you know, kids thrive on stimulation no matter what age, and there's no place stimulating like Disney for the bright colours, the music, and there's everything there that a kid needs to sort of take everything in.
Yeah.
And I think there's actually no right or wrong age. I think if you can go and you're happy going, you're comfortable going, like we said with everything else, you know your kids the best. Go, because I think they're going to get a lot out of it. And when they're very small, you'll find you get incredibly moving memories with those kids. The only thing, I'll back up what you said, you know, take as many photographs and stuff as possible, because these are really, really special times.
Yeah, but, definitely.
You know, from my point of view, you know, I went, my youngest was 4 at the time. He's now 11 or 12. I lost count.
More than 4.
Yeah, more than 4. You know, and I've got a whole bookshelf full of Disney photograph things that me and Trace just quite often pull out and have a sit down and go through. And that, to me, is what it's all about, when they were nice and cute and not horrible.
Yeah, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, both of mine have gone when they're kind of like minus 4 months, when they're still, you know, in Deb's tum. And so that's the earliest I've taken.
Doesn't count.
That's cheating.
My view is that there is something for them to do whatever their age is. Mm. You know, from being, you know, 11, 10 months, 6 months, whatever, up to 2, 3. There's always something different to do. Even now, we're finding, you know, there's things that they do that they haven't done before. So, you know, don't hold off on the holiday of a lifetime because you think they're not going to enjoy it or it'll be better for them in a few years' time. You know, so you can't turn back a clock, and you don't want to go, oh, I wish I had. So, yeah, no, take them now. Enjoy it.
I think you know, you're talking about these memories as well. We took Harry to Playhouse Disney, and it was just by far the most magical moment of the holiday. You know, I'll even admit I had a tear in my eye watching him when he was just getting so excited at the fact that directly in front of him was Mickey and all of those guys and Little Einsteins, and suddenly he was able to do pat, pat, pat and blast off along to the characters live on stage rather than to a television screen. And just that he absolutely loved it. And also, one other thing, don't underestimate the experience the kids get when you go. Harry, when we left, spoke only a few words, not many at all. But because of the stimulating stuff that he saw throughout the holiday, by the time we came back, he'd picked up hundreds of brand new words that he'd never been able to say before. You know, we left and he could speak, he could name most of the Disney characters, and he got colours and all sorts of stuff, because it was things that he experienced while we're in the parks and things that he saw for the very first time. And actually, yes, you know, some people might say, oh, that's rubbish, maybe it was just at that time where he's just developing and you were on holiday. But I genuinely think that actually being there and the things he experienced really did have an effect on him and really did help him. So, you know, take them when you're ready to take them. There is no right or wrong time. Well, there we go. That was a fairly lengthy, but I think in-depth look at taking young children to Walt Disney World. I hope that you find that useful. If you do have tips with regards to taking young children that we haven't covered, please do send us an email, disneybrit@hotmail.com, and let us know about the things that you find really useful when you're going to Walt Disney World. Well, there you go. That's it. That's the end of episode 25 of the podcast. Once again, thank you for joining us. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando, for their support, as always. Big thanks to Craig and Juz once again coming to join us for the podcast. And also, don't forget to make sure to check out the Disney Brit Legacy Award Hall of Fame. That's there at disneybrit.com/Hall of Fame. Make sure to email us your questions, comments and suggestions. You can email us at disneybrit@hotmail.com. Email us any tips that you have about going to Walt Disney World with young children. Maybe you've got some questions you're thinking you'd like to include on the trivia quiz, or just some general comments about the show. We are looking to do another listener email show again very, very soon. So please, please email in. They are the things that make up that kind of show. You can also ring our voicemail numbers on 0121 288 2858 from Europe and the UK, and 407-545-7980 if you are ringing from the US, Orlando-based number. Make sure to check out our website at disneybrit.com, and check out our Facebook page and our Disney Brit fan page over there as on Facebook. You can friend up myself, Juz, or Craig. We're more than happy to have more friends over there on Facebook. Lots of stuff's communicated through there, through our statuses, things like that. So please do come over there and say hello. Leave us a review on iTunes. Please, please do. We've had loads on there, and they really are helpful for those people who are looking for a new show to listen to. Don't forget, you can still buy copies of The Minnie Mouse, my new book, from Amazon in the US and in the UK, as well as now available through Waterstones, Borders, and WH Smith. Thanks to those people who, again, have donated to the show. It really is greatly appreciated. It really does help. And you can still sign up for Mouse Meets. The registration has not closed yet. Beginning of November, you have to get your form for booking and to sign up for Mouse Meets. You can do that at disneybrit.com/mousemeets.asp. Don't forget, of course, always also to check out our sister podcast at Iron Orlando. That is also now bi-weekly. So you get a week of Disney Brit and a week of Iron Orlando. Alternatively, and of course the last thing, as you know, if I'm telling you the date of the next show is Wednesday the 14th of October, that pretty much brings us to the end. So until next time, I'll see you.